from the Liberty University studio in Memphis, Tennessee, it's America's favorite gun-toting, Bible-clinging, deplorable American.
That's us. That's right. I love this American ride.
Todd Starnes.
Oh, yeah. Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to the Todd Starnes radio program. What an honor to have you with us today. As we broadcast border to border, coast to coast, across the fruited plain. Dylan, I have to laugh at you. I was going through some emails, and you know, one of the things that we do on this show, a lot of people think, oh, well, you know, Starnes has an easy gig, right? All he does is work 3 hours a day, and then he can put his feet up and enjoy a delicious cold, frosty Dr. Pepper or two and or three. And so Starnes has it made, but no, we actually do a lot of things outside of the, well, first of all, it takes multiple hours to prepare for broadcast excellence. And that normally starts in the right after the show concludes for the next day. And then we've got I've got the Newsmax show. So we do a full hour on TV. And that, you know, is weird because, you know, we have to do the makeup and the hair and you got to look. You got to look your best on TV. You can't look like a slob on, you know, national television. So that takes a little bit of time to get me looking somewhat presentable. And then, you know, there are all these other things. You know, people ask for, you know, to do interviews, and we try to accommodate everybody. So last night, there was a little calendar alert that I had an interview to do at 6:30 in the morning. And Dylan was like, do I have to be there?
I did say that. I responded almost immediately.
Oh, I saw that. Normally, being the genteel, you never respond to any text messages after hours.
True. Yeah, yeah. This is the one that I made an exception for.
Boy, you sure did. I've never seen anybody reply so quickly to it.
Well, 6:30 is very early. That means you have to wake up at 5:30.
Well, it does because, you know, you don't want to, you know, I've heard these early morning. I'm not an early morning guy. That is, I just don't do it. There's a great radio station in Gainesville, Georgia, our affiliate there, longtime affiliate, Bill, WDUN, and Bill Main is the big boss there. He's the man. And he does something like, I don't know, a 14-hour morning show. I've never seen, and the guy's up at like at the crack of, it's not even the crack of dawn. Dawn is not even cracked yet. He is there to watch dawn crack. And nobody wants to see dawn's crack. I'm not sure where I was going with that. But anyway, all that to say, Bill Main is just, he sounds so chipper. And I think the show starts at like 2 in the morning or something. And he always sounds so refreshed and like, ah, you know. And then he goes home and he walks the dog. And then he puts on his like boss hat and comes back to the office. The guy works like 24 hours a day. I don't know how he does it. I'm not that guy. I have, you know, I set my alarm. And this is how bad it is, Dylan. I set my alarm at 5 o'clock every morning because I say I'm going to get up. I've got to get the coffee on. I've got to do the. I got to write my my monologue. We got to put out the newsletter, and then I'm going to go for the walk at Shelby Farms in the morning. That's at 5 o'clock in the morning. So 5 o'clock in the morning, and my alarm goes off, and I hit it and reset it for 5:30. Goes off again. I set it for 6. So around 7 o'clock in the morning is pretty much when I actually begin to look somewhat functional.
You're in the right direction though, because most people don't even do that.
No, they don't.
And I've heard that you could set your alarm to wake you up, but your alarm is farther away from your bed, so you actually have to get up out of bed to turn it off.
Yeah, I'm not going to do that.
I'm not either.
That's too much work. But then this morning, you know, I was getting these text alerts at like 5 a.m. this morning, and I'd already said I was getting ready to get up, and I'm like, who in the world is texting? It was Ben Dieter.
Yeah, you and Ben Dieter, early risers now.
Early risers.
It's good for you, I've heard.
Yeah.
Tired at night.
It's debatable. It's debatable. So anyway, all that to say, I have no idea why I just shared that information. I just wanted to, you know, see if we could relate. Ladies and gentlemen, hey, can we talk about this debate last night in California? This is really interesting. So they have what they call a jungle primary. So it's not like you have a Republican primary and a Democrat primary, and then the winners face off in the general. In this particular race, it's everybody's in the same pool, and whoever comes out on top in the primary, they go toe-to-toe, and it doesn't matter if they're two Democrats, two Republicans, but that's how they do it. And the polling data has been really looking good for Steve Hilton, who is leading the polls. And then there's a guy by the name of Chad Bianco, who is the sheriff of Riverside County, and he is tied for second place with a guy named Tom Steyer, who's the Democrat. And so they were all up on stage. You had Javier Becerra. You had Katie Porter. Man, she is a mean woman. I mean, she is not a very kind person. And there was another guy I was not all that familiar with. Anyway, I thought it was interesting because there was a huge conversation about English and whether or not truck drivers should be required to speak English. And I thought this was an odd conversation to have, but California's come under fire because they have issued, I believe, 17,000 commercial driver's licenses to illegal aliens, and none of them speak English. And a lot of people are really concerned about that. I know the federal government stepped in, and Sean Duffy, the transportation secretary, has actually put a freeze on well over $100-some-odd million in funding because the state of California now refuses to rescind all of those commercial driver's licenses. And people are really, really nervous about all of this. But the Democrats are saying, how dare you? Who do you think you are? Now, I want you to listen to Katie Porter, and the question was about whether or not illegal alien truck drivers who are driving 80,000-pound trucks should be required to know that big yellow sign says sharp curve ahead. Here's what Katie Porter had to say.
Porter, same question. Do you believe that English proficiency, language proficiency should be strictly enforced for truck drivers? You have 60 seconds.
I would absolutely fight the Trump administration because the job of the California governor is to protect Californians. And right now, that includes protecting them from Donald Trump. Protecting Californians also includes enforcing traffic laws. And we've seen sometimes a need for oversight in California. For example, we have seen that the Department of Motor Vehicles was not enforcing rules around DUIs and drivers who had convictions for that. I am stunned that Mr. Bianco would say to black and brown Californians and immigrants who are being terrorized and racially profiled that you have to get over racism. It's not something that you get over. It's something that you fight. And if he doesn't understand the importance of that, he has no business representing a state with the diversity of California.
Ms. Porter, thank you very much. Mr. Bianco, I'll give you 15 seconds to respond.
Yeah, again, that's not even close to what I said. What I said is we're Californians, and I'm speaking for them, especially from law enforcement, when I deal with persons of color every single day, Californians are absolutely sick and tired of our politicians making race the basis of everything. It is not. And this racial divide that they are pushing between law enforcement and the public, or Democrat and Republican, absolutely has to stop. And I'm telling you, we are sick of it.
Yeah, boy, this is a head scratcher here. But all the Democrats on the stage say the same thing, that forcing black and brown Californians and illegals to know what the word stop means is racial profiling. Now, again, 17,000 illegals allowed to obtain commercial driver's licenses in California alone. We're hearing those numbers could be as many as 200,000 nationwide, by the way. So Steve Hilton was asked about all of this, and I just love his response. He told the story of Delilah Krause. She was 5 years old when a legal alien from India caused a multi-car pileup in California. I want you to listen to Steve Hilton here.
Mr. Hilton, would you require full compliance with the federal language standards for truck drivers? You have 60 seconds.
So I've discussed this with someone called Marcus Coleman from Bakersfield. His beautiful daughter, Delilah, was put into a coma by someone driving a truck. An illegal immigrant, didn't speak English, and his daughter now disabled for life. That's what we're dealing with here. It is completely ridiculous that we have people driving on our roads who can't understand road signs and can't speak English. So, yes, of course, and I've discussed this with my friend Sean Duffy, the Transportation Secretary, we will not be issuing commercial driver licenses when I'm governor to people who are illegally here and who don't speak English. That is obvious common sense.
Right? That seems pretty reasonable to me, ladies and gentlemen. And I did a little research on this young girl. Her name is Delilah Krause. Her father was critically injured in the same crash. Delilah suffered critical and life-altering injuries. Just a five-year-old little girl. She suffered a broken femur. She had skull fractures. She lost her ability to walk, talk, and eat orally. The guy behind the wheel, by the way, this Indian dude with the turban, crossed the southern border in October of 2022 and was actually released into the country by the Biden administration. Look, had this guy just been deported, little Delilah would literally be wrapping up her first year in kindergarten. But instead, the Democrats gave this guy a commercial driver's license, and now poor little Delilah is going to need lifelong therapy. Now, all of the Democrats on stage last night were saying that the true victim here is the illegal alien. But Mr. Hilton and Mr. Bianco, I think, rightly pointed out here that banning illegals from getting the CDLs is obvious common sense. Now, I'm curious to hear your thoughts on this. I do a lot of driving back and forth between Memphis and Nashville and Memphis and Dallas. And so in my experience, you can sort of tell who the illegal alien truck drivers are. And it is dangerous out there. I mean, you really have to be, when you're driving, to Dallas or to Nashville, it's almost like you're in a combat situation. You can't be, let your mind wander. You've got to keep your eye on the road, and especially if there are big rigs around. And it didn't used to be that way. I mean, I remember, we've got summer vacations right around the corner, and lots of you guys are hitting the roadways, going to places like, the Gulf of America or Dollywood or Silver Dollar City. Back in the 1970s, I don't know about you, there was no greater joy than our family summer vacation. And we would always go down to like Panama City Beach, or we would go up to the Ozark Mountains, and we'd be in the back of the station wagon. And Dylan, this was back before they made you wear seatbelts. And so the kids, we'd be in the back of the station wagon, and the window would be rolled down, and you'd see the big rigs, and we'd be out there. You'd had Convoy playing on the 8-track, and the big rig coming up, and you'd pump your hands in the air hoping that they would blow the horn, And then once they blew the horn, I mean, that was it. Your summer vacation was made. But those days, geez, long gone. And now the kids are literally strapped into their seats like they're about to take off on a space shuttle. And you got some big rig driver wearing a turban from Pakistan on the bumper. And you're sitting there praying to the good Lord, you're just going to make it to the Buc-ee's in one piece. Mercy sakes, America. All right, got to take a break here. 901-260-5926, our telephone number. That's 901-260-5926. This is the Todd Stern Show.
Here's something most people don't know. When Warren Buffett was just 13 years old, he didn't put his money into a savings account. While other kids were earning next to nothing at local banks, Buffett put $114 into a little-known investment. Today, that $114 would be worth over $15 million. And it wasn't a risky trade. It wasn't even insider knowledge. It was an account that's been around since 1888. And over the last 25 years, it's averaged 29% a year. That's what happens when your money is allowed to compound. Compare that to today's savings accounts, paying less than 0.5%. While inflation quietly eats away at your buying power. Buffett understood early, banks are great businesses, just not for savers. If you'd like to see what some investors call the 29% account, go now to secretaccount29.com. That's secretaccount, 29.com. secretaccount29.com. Secretaccount29.com.
Welcome back, everybody. This is the Todd Stearns Radio Show, 901-260-5926. That's 901-260-5926. You know, one of the other things, when you look at what Gavin Newsom has done and the policies of these Democrats, it's just so unacceptable. And I was watching the moderators, and they did a pretty good job of asking the questions. There's only, you know, they can't let it become a free for all here. But the Democrats, and I thought Steve Hilton especially, did a very good job of pointing out that the Democrats have ruled California for decades. They are responsible for everything that is wrong, from the numbers of people leaving, the homelessness crisis, the drugs, the whole nine yards. As a matter of fact, here's Katie Porter, and this sort of tells you everything you need to know. She was asked to grade Gavin Newsom on how he's handled the homelessness crisis. Take a listen.
What grade would you give him on homelessness, and what, if anything, would you do differently? You have 60 seconds.
I'm a notoriously tough grader, but I would probably give him a B on homelessness. I don't think this has been an easy problem to solve, but I do give him a lot of credit for calling attention to the problem. When he campaigned 8 years ago, he was talking about housing when nobody else was.
Wow, by the way, I'd love to be in your class, Katie, if you get a B for what Gavin Newsom's done on homelessness. My goodness.
Yeah, I mean, Hilton's absolutely right about that. And good for him for calling her out on it. But anyway, the question is, will California voters wake up? And are they willing to step off that Democrat Party plantation? You know, Steve Hilton also pointed out in the debate that one of the reasons why gas prices are so high is because of all of the additional taxes and fees that California has levied on all of the hardworking taxpayers of the state. And again, California is a beautiful place, a wonderful state, beautiful people. There's no reason for them to move to places like Tennessee or Texas. And I'm telling you, I am really concerned. God bless Marsha Blackburn. Marsha Blackburn's coming under fire. And you know why Marsha Blackburn is coming under fire? Because she said, don't you bring your left-wing politics to Tennessee. You are not welcome here. And now the left is going bonkers over that. But I'm in 1,000% agreement with Marsha Blackburn. We don't want you here. We don't want you to bring your far-left wackadoodle policies that turned your states into hellholes. And we don't want you to come to our state, which is like a paradise, a utopia, and turn it into, I don't know, California with an accent. Nobody wants that. And I don't know about you, but you folks in North Carolina especially, you ought to understand, you know exactly what Marsha Blackburn is talking about, because you guys used to have a lovely red state. And then the liberals started moving in. Look at what's happening in Virginia right now. What was it? Ann Coulter had an interesting statistic that she posted on X about the numbers of illegals, or rather the number of immigrants that were moving into Virginia. And like years ago, that number was, well, here we go, in 1970, one out of every 100 Virginians was foreign born. One out of every 100. Right now, by 2012, by the way, one in nine Virginians was foreign born. You see what's going on here, ladies and gentlemen? All right, got to take a break. 901-260-5926. Again, our telephone number, 901-260-5926. This is the Todd Stearns Show.
Here's something most people don't know. When Warren Buffett was just 13 years old, he didn't put his money into a savings account. While other kids were earning next to nothing at local banks, Buffett put $114 into a little-known investment. Today, that $114 would be worth over $15 million. And it wasn't a risky trade. It wasn't even insider knowledge. It was an account that's been around since 1888. And over the last 25 years, it's averaged 29% a year. That's what happens when your money is allowed to compound. Compare that to today's savings accounts, paying less than 0.5%, while inflation quietly eats away at your buying power. Buffett understood early, banks are great businesses, just not for savers. If you'd like to see what some investors call the 29% account, go now to secretaccount29.com. That's secretaccount, the numbers, 29.com. Secretaccount29.com.
And welcome back to the Todd Stearns Radio Show. Happy to have you with us today. By the way, this portion of the Todd Stearns Radio Show brought to you by our friends at Newsmax. Did you know that 70% of Americans are not getting the full benefits they deserve? Social Security expert Michael Allen says he has five key strategies to increase your benefits by as much as $188,000 over a lifetime. It's all in his free special report, courtesy of Newsmax. Whether you're getting benefits or you soon will be getting benefits, well, you need to check out the Social Security report. You can give them a call and they'll send it to you free. 800-999-9690. That's 800-999-9690. Text and data rates may apply. All right, let's go to the phones. Robert in Texas on Patriot Talk 920. Hi, Robert. What's on your mind today?
Well, so you're doing a good job. You caught my attention with Marsha Blackburn getting some abuse for, you know, turning back the tide. What about all those high-profile politicians in New York that were just ragging on conservatives and how they weren't wanted there, and the governor just making points about we don't need you, and how come there was no hubbub about that?
Well, you know, Robert, it's a great point, and you're talking about Andrew Cuomo, who said, gosh, this was almost 10 years ago, and he said that conservative Republicans, and then he drilled down. He says, if you believe in pro-traditional marriage, if you are pro-life, if you are pro-Second Amendment, there is no place for you in the entire state of New York.
Well, I just hope a lot of people took that to heart and didn't go there.
Well, yeah, as a matter of fact, I mean, there are so many different reports out there, Robert, of people that are packing up and leaving, so much so that Kathy Hochul said, if you really want to be patriotic, you would stay and pay more taxes in New York State.
Right. If the morale doesn't improve, the beatings will continue.
Well said. Well said. It's true, though. But again, Marsha Blackburn's got a great point in Tennessee. We welcome new families. We welcome new businesses as long as they check the blue state policies at the state line. And it makes sense, Robert. That's why they're moving. That's why they're leaving those destroyed states. And those states were destroyed by the policies of the Democrats.
Yes, and I consider that a disease that's spreading to perfectly good cities. If you want to take a nation down, all you have to do is destroy all their major cities and move to the mid-tier cities and take it on down. But I think they have a case of double standards. Why is Blackburn so out of line to do this?
It's a fair point. But, Robert, the reality is that most of the people who populate the newsrooms, they feel just like Andrew Cuomo feels. And I will say this, Robert. I mean, you guys in Texas, you're dealing with this probably more so than us in Tennessee with the influx of liberals from California.
Well, we've been a target of the bluing of the state for a good 10 years, and now they are going in full court press mode.
Well, this Senate race is going to be interesting to watch, and Tallarico is getting a lot of money, and a lot of it's coming from out of state. So they see, or at least they sense, blood in the water in the Senate race, Robert. How do you feel that's going to go? You think Paxton's going to be the guy?
Well, we got all of our cards, you know, in his deck because he's the only decent guy, but we have a backup. We could vote for Cornyn if somehow he won in the primary and still get a Republican. But money seems to do it nowadays. People don't look at policy or the individuals. It's like, how many times do they get a text on their phone is how they weigh the possibility of voting.
Mm. Robert, we got to leave it there. Great thoughts, my friend, and thank you for listening to us. Thanks for listening to Patriot Talk 920. 901-260-5926 is our telephone number. That's 901-260-5926. So yesterday on Newsmax, Congresswoman Mary Miller dropped by, and she revealed there's some crazy stuff happening right now in the state of Illinois. So May Day is coming up. That's May 1st, and that's when all of the communists take to the streets in March. Schools across Chicago are going to allow students and teachers to get out and march in these radical protests. And Mary Miller is up in arms about all of this, but she also revealed in our conversation that there are teachers and they are telling children that America is a bad country. I want you to take a listen to our conversation from last night. I want to jump right into this. So where is all of this radicalization coming from? Is it the local school level, or are we talking about the national teachers unions?
Well, it's coming down from the top, which is the teachers unions. And I think that we have to admit that the teachers unions have done incalculable damage to our country. This has been going on for a long time. They are indoctrinating our children rather than educating them. And this is a national problem, but Chicago is a case study in it.
I know my Newsmax colleague, Kelly Sadler, was on this show yesterday. She lives in Virginia. Her two sons came home from school yesterday, and they asked if she was going to vote yes on the gerrymander. It turns out their teachers actually weaponized the classroom to advance the Democrat Party's agenda. I want you to listen to this.
Yeah, in civics class, I think they took that as an invitation to teach the children what party they should belong to. Progressivism, Democrats, Obama, and that the conservatives are aligned with Donald Trump. They're going to steal the elections in the midterm, and you need to go out and tell your parents to vote yes on this referendum. And Todd, let me tell you, since I put that story out, other parents in the district have come to me and told me similar stories.
So to your point, Congresswoman, I'm wondering how big of a problem is this across the country with these schools?
It is widespread, and I can't encourage parents enough to please get involved, visit your school, look at the curriculum, talk to your children. I know I have had conversations with Secretary McMahon, and she's visiting schools across the country where the students can't say our pledge. I've talked to parents whose children have been upset when they've heard the national anthem song, and when they ask them why their child, their first grader, has told them back, because America's a bad country. And this is, it's outrageous. I think the majority of Americans now are functionally illiterate. And in Illinois, we have over a million students that can't read at grade level, read or do math, much less understand civics. They know nothing about how exceptional our country is, that we're a constitutional republic, that we have, you know, separation of powers, nothing. But yet they're indoctrinating kids. They're uninformed. They're uneducated, and thus they're easily manipulated into accepting these radical ideologies.
All right, that was Congresswoman Mary Miller having a conversation on Newsmax last night. And it goes back to what Linda McMahon said just a few days ago, that many schools around the nation are simply not teaching kids to be patriotic. Take a listen. Cut four.
I'll tell you the saddest thing that happened to me relative to any of these tours was at one school that I went to. And the principal told me, he said, wow, he said, I'm really glad you had the words, you know, to the Pledge of Allegiance, you know, up on the boards, because I don't think the kids in our school know what they are. And they can opt out of saying the Pledge of Allegiance. And so the school just opted out and they didn't have to say it anymore. I thought, what a comment that is. And this same principal, when he got up to announce for everyone to stand to say the Pledge of Allegiance. He says, now understand, you're not pledging allegiance to any particular flag, but it's to a spirit, so you can pledge this allegiance to whatever flag you think is appropriate for you. And I'm going, wow, how can we really drive home patriotism and love of country and respect for our flag if we actually have teachers and principals who are not encouraging the very basics of what is patriotic in our country?
I'm just going to say this. I think we would be better off if Democrats had no access to our public school classrooms. I think teachers who are Democrats are very dangerous. I think, by and large, they have been using their platforms in their classrooms to advance this unpatriotic ideology. And look, the Trump administration knows this. Last year, they issued an executive order ending radical indoctrination in K-12 schooling. And the president pointing out that in recent years, parents have witnessed schools indoctrinating their kids in radical anti-American ideologies while deliberately blocking parental oversight. And the president is right. He says it's nothing more than an echo chamber, and the kids are forced to accept these ideologies without question or critical examination. And this is why we have seen such a radical shift in thinking about ideas like capitalism, for example. It's because the teachers are telling the kids that capitalism is bad, that America is guilty of all the world's problems. I mean, you can go down the list here. The president said in many cases, innocent children are compelled to adopt identities as either victims or oppressors solely based on their skin color and other immutable characteristics. In other instances, young men and women are made to question whether they were born in the wrong body and whether to view their parents and their reality as enemies to be blamed. And you just heard what Mary Miller said. We had Kelly Sadler, the Newsmax host, on this very program a few days ago, talking about how her kids' teachers were like, you've got to go home and you've got to tell your parents to do this. I mean, I think that is the norm, and those are not anomalies in many of our public schools around the nation. So anyway, I'm glad the president is addressing this, but the reality is the executive orders are not being enforced, and we have got to start enforcing these executive orders. And if that means defunding, suspending all federal funding to schools that are unpatriotic, I say we got to do it. Now, I believe that one of the chief things that schools ought to be doing is promoting American patriotism. And right now we've got at least a generation of young people that were raised to hate America. And that is a tough thing, and it's a sad thing, because we really do have the greatest nation on the face of the earth. And it's interesting when you talk to people who travel, and I have been overseas, and I got to tell you, I love Israel. I love, you know, Europe and Italy, great areas. But they don't hold a candle to the United States of America. I mean, that's right. If I want to go to Paris, I'm going to go to Paris, Tennessee. Isn't that home of the world's largest fish fry, by the way, Dylan? Can somebody check me on that?
I'll verify for you.
I was going to, if I wanted to go to Pittsburgh, I'm going to go to South Pittsburgh, Tennessee for the annual Cornbread Festival. That's where they make cast iron skillets too, by the way. So all that to say, I'm not sure what I meant to say there. Except I was getting off on a tangent.
It is. Paris, Tennessee is the biggest fish fry, largest fish fry.
And they also have a replica of the Eiffel Tower.
They do, yeah.
All right, so why do you need to spend all that money? Go over to a country, they hate you. You know, the people there are very unkind, very unfriendly, and they're very ungrateful, too. We pulled their le fat out of le fire during World War II. Otherwise, they'd all be speaking German. I wonder if anybody regrets that decision. So all that to say, let's start enforcing these executive orders. And once we can fix the broken school systems in America, we're going to be okay. We're going to make it. If we don't, we're not. I mean, it really is that simple. All right, got to take a break here. 901-260-5926. That's 901-260-5926. This is the Todd Stern Show. right, let's go to the phones. Statesville, North Carolina. Billy, listening to us on WSIC. Hi, Billy. What's on your mind?
Well, I was just listening to all the things going on in the country, like kids and heaven forbid, adults, even principals that don't know the Pledge of Allegiance and even don't think it's important to say it and mean it. And you put that along with everything else going on, and it just kind of is a worrisome thing to me about the direction this country's going in.
Do you remember back when you were in school, Billy, was there an emphasis placed on American patriotism?
Oh, of course there was. That and prayer and a lot of other good things that people have managed to do away with over the years. And every time they take away something like that, like prayer, things just get worse eventually.
Well,
generally, they didn't take that long.
No, that's true. They do. You know, I remember, again, as a child growing up in the 70s, you know, we would, for example, for, you know, Veterans Day, we would, you know, have veterans coming into our classroom as grade schoolers. And, you know, there was an emphasis for children to join organizations like the Boy Scouts or the Cub Scouts. And, you know, you were taught how to properly fold a flag, you know, at the school flagpole. So it was just infused into really everything that we did in the school. And I was really thankful for that growing up. And it troubles me that our kids these days are not getting that sort of patriotic education.
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't know how long, even as big as and as great as this country is, how many years is that kind of foolishness going on, is it going to take to weaken this country?
Well, I would say it's already weakened. Yeah, I think it's already happened.
Yeah, but I mean to the point to where it's really dangerous.
I think it's already happened. I think we're in a very dangerous spot right now in the nation. And I am encouraged. I mean, when you look at the numbers of Gen Zers that are going back to church that seem to be embracing American values, I mean, that is certainly encouraging. But unfortunately, we've had at least a full generation that was indoctrinated, and I'm not sure we can undo a lot of that damage, which is why it's so vitally important for us to get a hold of the school system so that we can undo all of this. And I just don't see the Trump administration being really serious at this point about addressing that issue.
But I don't understand how somebody that calls themselves an American can say, the Pledge of Allegiance is not important. You don't even have to say it if you don't want to. Or if you want to pledge allegiance to China or Russia, that'll be fine, too. You know, what kind of fool does that?
That's a good question. I mean, a liberal, I would say. I mean, if you're asking for an answer, but I think you meant that to be rhetorical. But, yes, I get your point. Billy, I've got to leave it there, my friend. Thank you for calling in. 901-260-5926 is our telephone number. That's 901-260-5926. During the break, I would love for you to head over to toddstearns.com. We have a crazy couple of stories. Number one, Congressman John Rose, really fed up with John Thune, the majority leader. And we have an exclusive story there coming from Congress. Also, do Republicans really want to win the midterms? This is my op-ed of the week, and I would encourage you to go to the website and check that out. And while you are there, I want you to also go and pre-order a copy of my brand new book. It'll be in stores at the end of May. It's called The Golden Age, How Trump Saved America. The Golden Age, How Trump Saved America. And this is the blueprint. This is the book that's going to not only celebrate what Trump has done, but it's going to show us what we need to do to keep on going. And we don't want the America First movement to die. Do we? No. So that's why I want you to pre-order a copy. Get one for yourself. Get one for your kids. I want everybody in the country reading The Golden Age, How Trump Saved America. All right. Hang tight, everybody. Hour two of The Big Show coming up next.
From the Liberty University studio in Memphis, Tennessee, it's Common Sense Conservative Commentary from Todd Starnes.
That's us. That's right. I love this
So Baylor University is making some headlines. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Todd Stearns Radio Show, Hour 2 of the Big Show. Great to have you with us. By the way, ToddStearns.com. Go to my website. Check out all of our great original exclusive content, all of our videos. And I want to say a very special hello, by the way, speaking of videos, to the folks that are watching the Todd Stearns Show on YouTube, on Facebook, as well as Rumble and other platforms. So great to have all of you folks with us. During the break, we'll be engaging on our YouTube live chat. So we'd love for you guys to pop over there, leave a message. If maybe you have a question, I'm happy to answer that. And I'll be doing that in the upcoming break here. Baylor University used to be the largest Baptist school in the world. And I think that honor, that distinction now goes to either Grand Canyon University in Arizona or Liberty University in Virginia. But anyway, Baylor used to be the world's biggest Baptist school. And Baylor's gone woke. There's really no nice way to say it, but Baylor has gone woke. As a matter of fact, a good many Baptist colleges and universities have also gone woke. And it's a tough situation for the Baptists, and I feel bad for my fellow people because, you know, unfortunately, I don't think the average Southern Baptist is woke at all. I think the average Southern Baptist is a gun-toting, Bible-clinging, patriotic American citizen. But anyway, Baylor University, they have, for years now, they've been dilly-dallying when it comes to embracing the values of the Holy Scriptures. And so now, you know, they're embracing the whole LGBTQIA stuff, all of that. But one of the other things is that they are anti-conservative, which I know is a big shock for a lot of people that live in Texas. And Baylor was sort of like where everybody sent their, if you were a Baptist in Texas, that's where everybody sent their kids to go to school. Yes, Dylan, even the women, even the girls, and they would go to find their husbands at Baylor University because that's the way things were done in the Baptist faith tradition. We have a little saying in the Baptist college world, ring by spring. Many of the young ladies, good Southern Baptist gals, they would major in being a missus. That's what they wanted. That was what their degree was. And there's nothing wrong with that, by the way. So anyway, this headline here from Breitbart, and people are just really enraged over this. Turning Point USA was doing a big event on campus. The headline, Baylor University sabotages event featuring Border Czar Tom Holman. Baylor denied ticket holders from the greater Waco community after initially approving non-student ticket holders. The event was hosted by the school's Turning Point USA chapter and featured Tom Holman and Texas Attorney General Kim Paxton and the conservative plagiarist Benny Johnson, pardon me, podcaster Benny Johnson. It's part of the This is the Turning Point tour. But despite initially approving non-student ticket holders, reading from the Breitbart piece here, but initially they approved the non-student ticket holders, Baylor now denied 4,500 people from attending the event in Waco Hall, a dome-roofed auditorium on campus. A TPUSA rep said the event was originally designed to be open to both the student body and local Waco community. So anyway, this is terrible. They're saying that only about 400 students showed up for the event, and it was basically a cavernous building, and nobody was in the room except for the 400 kids. And Turning Point is blaming this on Baylor, and I think there are two separate stories here. One is that Baylor really doesn't want Turning Point USA on their campus, but I think the broader story is that Turning Point USA is having some problems. And people aren't showing up in the record numbers that they had in the aftermath of Charlie's assassination. And they've got to figure that out. And look, a lot of that has to do with leadership. And this is nothing against Mrs. Kirk, but I'm not sure she's the right person to lead that organization right now. Does that mean I'm not being critical of her. I'm just saying you need a strong, bold leader, somebody who has vision and can implement that vision. And at this juncture, I mean, she does a great job, I think, speaking and doing the public speaking. I've got no problem with that, but I'm just telling you that one of the big problems with Turning Point USA, and this was back when Charlie was alive, is they had no infrastructure. They had no bones. You got to have some bones. They never had that. They always relied on Charlie being out on Fox News Channel and doing the big debates, going out to the college campuses. And now everybody and their brother's doing that. And let me just say, it's lost its luster. I mean, it's just right. You know what I'm talking about here. I mean, everybody's out there trying to engage. And by the way, there's an authenticity problem, too. And I say that because it seems like the speakers that are everybody's wanting to be the next Charlie Kirk, and they're really trying hard. And they get up there, and instead of, like, engaging in a winsome way with these students, they're, like, screaming matches. And you're like, wow, this is really, what is the word? Untoward. Oh, my. Land sakes. So, anyway, Turning Point is saying, well, the reason we didn't have a sold-out arena is because Baylor wouldn't allow people off campus. Okay, are you telling me that on a massive campus like Baylor, only 400 kids showed up? Is that what? Because that, to me, is the bigger story. Also, Baylor refused to allow media to attend. This coming from Channel 10 News there in Waco, KWTX. Media organizations were denied access to a Turning Point USA event at Baylor University. The conservative group and university administrators offered conflicting accounts of the restrictions. Oh, by the way, Don Trump Jr. was actually supposed to be there. He didn't show up. Keep in mind, remember what happened where with the University of Georgia, right? They had the big UGA event. I mean, just a few hundred folks were there, and that they featured the vice president. So Turning Point said the media restrictions were due to the venue they had rented, and they said they believed the event would accommodate the general public. Baylor said that they were clear with event organizers from the beginning that the event would be for students, faculty, and staff only, with an additional 125 seats for invited guests from Turning Point. And again, the local reporting is about, well, they said more than 400 students made their way inside the cavernous building. So there you go. Peter Fernandez, the president of the Turning Point Baylor chapter, told the TV station how their chapter had grown over the past 2 years. Anyway, it's I wish them all the best, and I have no ill feelings at all for Turning Point. But I think the days of the big mass arena events are over for Turning Point. And right now, I think they also have a messaging problem. I'm not sure they understand who they are or what they want to be moving forward. Do they want to be a political action committee? Do they want to be, I mean, are they a wing now of the Republican Party? You know, those are a lot of big questions they're going to have to be asking as they move forward. 901-260-5926 is our telephone number. Where is that story? Ah, yes. Dylan, we have news from Starbucks. You know, Starbucks is moving their hub, their headquarters, to Nashville, Tennessee. Did you know that?
Yes, I recently heard about this.
So see, they're all based in Seattle. And I hear it's a lovely town, but it rains all the time, and it's just kind of cold.
Really? Because I heard they're all depressed.
And that, too. Yeah, that, too. I was trying to be nice. I really was.
They had good coffee.
Yeah.
Or decent or bad coffee.
So anyway, everybody's moving to Nash Vegas. And by the way, that is what a left-wing city looks like. You had a perfectly great conservative southern town. You had Dolly Parton and Benny Pearl and Grandpa Jones. Hey, Grandpa, what's for supper? You had all these great folks. Hee-haw, real country music, no bromances down on Lower Broadway. Just men and women, country boys and girls getting down on the farm. And now it's like, I don't know, Las Vegas, West Hollywood. There's some freaky stuff going on down in Nashville. But anyway, they're moving everybody out from Seattle, Starbucks is, to Nashville. And now there's big trouble. According to the New York Post, lefty Starbucks office workers refused to move from Seattle to new hub in Deep Red, Tennessee. This is written by Ariel Zibler. Starbucks office workers balking at orders to relocate to the company's new $100 million Nashville hub. Some left-leaning workers are repulsed by the prospect of living and working in the capital of Deep Red, Tennessee. It really is red, right? I mean, I think we've only got like three Democrats in the state house. The Java giant has been struggling to persuade employees to move from Seattle, even after warning some of them they could lose their jobs if they refuse. The pressure is centered on Starbucks' roughly 100-member North America sourcing team, which was told to move down south or risk losing their jobs. Now, you know, Dylan, I've toyed, you know, over the years, you know, people say, maybe you need to move back to New York, do the show from New York, or maybe you need to move the show to Nashville. You know, so you're closer to all of the, you know, celebrities and all that kind of stuff, or Boca Raton or Washington, D.C. And I said, you know, I'm kind of happy here, right? I mean, we're situated between, we've got Corky's Barbecue on one side, and then we've got Central Barbecue on the other, and Topps Barbecue across the street. So I think we're, you know, in a pretty good spot.
It doesn't get too much better food-wise here.
Oh, by the way, you know what they're building around the – so this is exciting news here. They're building a Sonic, like, within walking distance next to the bank and that big lot.
Oh, yeah.
And right – like, this is also within walking distance – the new Whataburger, or not Whataburger, the new In-N-Out Burger.
In-N-Out, yeah.
In-N-Out is coming to Memphis.
Which is better than Whataburger, some would say.
I hope the windows are bulletproof. I really do. Anyway. So all that to say, I mean, if I had decided to move to Washington, I would have had to come to you and say, Dylan, we're going to have to relocate. And would you have moved?
It would have taken a lot of convincing.
No, by convincing, you mean a lot of money.
A lot of money.
So Starbucks kind of figured out that, hey, you know what? That could be a problem here. So here's what Starbucks did. The company offered to reimburse up to $2,000 in travel cost for employees just to visit Nashville and explore the city. They also dangled retention bonuses. Oh, I don't like that. Why are people dangling? No dangling, please. Are you ready for this? So the bonuses? Starting at $15,000. The Post has Starbucks long cultivating a progressive image, backing racial equity initiatives, promoting LGBT inclusion, and aligning itself with other left-leaning issues, a posture that has helped cement its reputation as a latte liberal brand. Last year, the company closed hundreds of stores and conducted sweeping layoffs in the wake of sales declines. You know why? If they just focused more on the roasting of their beans as they did the roasting of conservatives, maybe they'd have a decent cup of coffee. Anyway, Starbucks says their Nashville push is part of a broader $100 million investment that's expected to bring in as many as 2,000 jobs to the city over the next 5 years. So there you go. And now Starbucks HQ, they're just really perplexed over all of these liberal employees. I have a great solution to this problem. You bring them in, the purple-haired girls and the soy boys, and you say, here's the deal, kids. You're either moving to Nashville or you're fired. Good luck to you. We'll be right back. All right, welcome back, everybody. This is the Todd Stearns Radio Show. Wow. All right. This is interesting. Can we talk about it's weird. Speaking of Nashville, there's a country music songwriter, and the dude's gay, and he's married to a man, and they're buying children all over the place. And so anyway, the guy went viral because they're posting these TikTok videos, or so I don't know, Instagram, one of those platforms, and they're mocking the newborn baby they just purchased. And the baby, they asked the poor baby, does baby want mommy? And then the poor old baby starts crying because the baby's hungry, and the baby realized right away, oh, wait a second, that's not mommy. And I mean, it's really offensive. And quite frankly, it looks like child abuse to me. But now when the Supreme Court redefined what God had originally defined as marriage, I predicted at the time that it was going to be anything goes, and that one day people would be getting married to animals, people would be shacking up with their computers, and who's to say, I mean, you know, again, if anything goes, then maybe even three people could get married, or four people. And man, you should have seen that. I got put on every anti-gay, homophobic, you know, website. Man, they were coming after me. But ladies and gentlemen, once again, yours truly has been proven correct after all. There was the story of the guy who tried to get married to his laptop in Boston. And I was concerned about that relationship. I mean, you know, you don't want to get a virus. You know, you don't want to download a virus. That's not good. And then there was the lady who wanted to have relations with a tree. And now this story out of Canada where three gay guys are in a three-way gay relationship and they're adopting a child. Cut number six.
For the last 7 years, Jonathan Bédard, Eric Leblanc, and Justin Maheu have been waiting to become parents together.
All right, so here's what we're going to do. I wasn't watching the clock. We're going to come back, and we're going to tell you what happened to these guys. And also, somebody is getting betrothed to an animal in America. We're going to tell you about that, too. 901-260-5926, our number. That's 901-260-5926. This is the Todd Stearns Show. All right, welcome back to the Todd Stearns Radio Show. So look, here's the deal. The three gay guys in a three-way gay relationship, is that what they call a throuple? Anyway, they're purchasing a baby girl together. I want you to listen to this report.
For the last 7 years, Jonathan Bédard, Eric Leblanc, and Justin Maheu have been waiting to become parents together, something that officially happened yesterday.
She's perfect, of course. Like any, she's curious, she's energetic, she loves to play, she loves to jump, she loves to dance.
They adopted their three-year-old through Quebec's Youth Protection Services, but first had to be approved as foster parents, something that required a lot of work and openness, they say, to their relationship.
We had a lot of things to go through in order to be able to be to have that accreditation, and it's through that process that they learned that we are a little different because we're three, but we're not different from any other family.
Some other Canadian provinces, including Ontario and British Columbia, legally recognize more than two parents. Quebec does not. Last April, a Quebec Superior Court judge ruled the government has a year to modify the civil code to allow a child to have more than two recognized parents, saying the current situation is unconstitutional and violates the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms since it discriminates against different family models. Quebec is appealing the decision. The Justice Ministry declined our request for an interview, saying they won't comment since the matter is in court.
We think that it either way, it might go all the way to the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
But we're saddened from the fact that we're not backed by our own government, which is supposed to be an open government that wants to help every single family.
While the law doesn't recognize all three as parents, they say they're sharing the responsibilities equally and doing whatever they can to create a stable home and secure future for their daughter.
We talk about what come up if we split up or if someone dies and stuff like that. We do anticipate those things because we have to, because we're not protected if it doesn't.
And after what it has taken to get here, they're enjoying this moment.
We are lucky to be three to give her all that support, but I think we're the lucky ones to have her in our life.
That poor child. And again, ladies and gentlemen, once you redefine what God defines, and who are you? Who are you to say that that is wrong? Dylan, this story from South Africa, there's a man by the name of Marius Els who was in a gay relationship with a giraffe.
Oh. Like a grown giraffe?
Like a real giraffe, not like the Toys R Us mascot.
Right.
This is a real giraffe. By the name, his name is Gerald the Giraffe.
Of course it is.
And it was platonic, of course. And Els was from South Africa, and he developed intense feelings for the giraffe that he actually named Gerald. He spent a great deal of time with the animal on a wildlife property, feeding and interacting with it closely. Friends and family expressed concern. You think? You think so? Friends and family expressed concern that he had become overly emotionally attached and was treating the giraffe almost like a human companion.
Could you imagine him talking to his mom? He's like, "Mom, I'm bringing someone over for dinner. We are going to have to take the roof off, though."
What do you mean I can't bring Gerald for Thanksgiving dinner? He's part of the family. Come on, mother.
I don't think Gerald eats turkey.
I don't think so either. Well, the story has unfortunately a very sad ending. It turns out while he was interacting with Gerald. Oh, God, this is terrible. While he was interacting one day with Gerald, Gerald apparently wasn't in the mood. And reportedly headbutted and trampled poor Mr. Els.
My gosh.
Resulting in fatal injuries.
Jeez.
It's a terrible story. Experts say that giraffes, despite their calm appearance, are powerful and unpredictable animals, especially adult males. It's a sad story.
This may be the only time I've heard of a giraffe being aggressive. And if that's the reason why it's aggressive, I'm okay with that.
I told you, don't touch me down there. Allegedly.
Yikes.
Very sad. So I did a little bit of research, Dylan, and it is true. This is weird, but this is not like anomalies. This is really happening all over the world, where people are getting married to things that are non-human. A lady by the name of Erica Labrie, she married the Eiffel Tower. She actually took the tower's last name. She goes, I am not joking. In 2007, she married the Eiffel Tower, her new name, Erica Eiffel. She said, "What can I say? I like metal structures." She did. Other people have been romantically attached to computers, robots. The whole AI thing is going to get really out of hand. I mean, really out of hand.
These people are probably eating that all up.
A British woman, Kate Cunningham, held a ceremony. She married a tree to protest a plan to build a bypass road. She said the act symbolized her commitment to protecting nature. And in parts of India, tree marriages are sometimes part of cultural or spiritual rituals, not a romantic relationship. For example, in certain traditions, a person may be symbolically married to a tree to ward off bad luck or align astrological factors. Another guy claimed he married the Berlin Wall. I can't. And in Japan, somebody actually married a pillow. I guess you could say it was my pillow.
Wow.
Oh, this is sad. And also musical instruments. So you can marry your musical instruments. Oh, are you playing your saxophone? No, I'm making out with my wife. My bad.
Get a room.
My bad. That's just terrible. It's called objectophilia. They actually have a psychological name for this, which is a relationship where you are connecting on an emotional level to an object. In other words, these people are slap crazy nuts. That's what this is. Jeez, Alu. But again, can we just go back to this one central truth? When you redefine what God defined, you get chaos in the culture. And this is going to be a big issue. You watch. You're going to have more of these three-people relationships and four-people relationships. And who are we at this point? Who are we? Because you'll have people in the LGBT community, or at least the G's and the B's. Wait a second, and the L's? No, I forget. Anyway, let's just say you'll have a couple of gay guys, and they're like, well, this is just unacceptable. I mean, nobody, we can't have three people getting married. That's just immoral. Oh, really? Says who? Hmm? You're gonna make that assumption or that assertion? You going to do that? You see what happened here, ladies and gentlemen? It is a slippery, slippery slope. All that to say, just stay away from the hippopotamuses. 901-260-5926, our telephone number. Let's go to John in Dawsonville, Georgia, listening to us on WDUN. Oh, by the way, I just heard from Bill Maine, who said he appreciated the shout-out. And Dylan, he says, by the way, only Tony Orlando has ever seen the crack of dawn.
That's pretty good.
That's well played, Bill Maine. John, what's going on?
Hey, Todd, it's a pleasure to speak to you. You're a great American.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
I have 2 points to make, and I need to make sure I get my second point in before you cut me off. First thing I was going to say about the schools is, it started, you know, years and years ago in the universities, all this progressivism, and then it moved, filtered its way down to the high schools. Now it's all the way down to the grade schools. And I hope we can get rid of the Department of Education before Trump gets out of office, because that thing needs to be gone. Something's got to be done about this school situation.
Yeah, John, I agree with you. I think that's it's going to have to be the number one thing that they do is shut down the Department of Education, give control of the schools back to the local communities, and we can fix what's broken at that point. But if they don't, then it's never going to be abolished, ever.
That's true. And my second point was I finally got to see you on TV. I usually don't watch news on TV, but I was clicked on Newsmax the other night, and you happened to be on. And so I wanted to tell Dylan he might want to keep you away from those barbecue places for a while. Just saying.
Well, what does that mean? Jeez, hello. So, John, you call into this program, and you're criticizing my girth, sir?
Oh, you're looking a little heavy there, Todd.
Oh, geez, Alou. Yeah, that's because I do enjoy some good barbecue.
Well, I do, too, so I can't fault you for that. But
all right.
You just might need to lay off of it a little bit.
You want me to eat a salad? Is that what you want, John? I need to eat a salad.
Well, I don't know.
All right, John. Thank you for the call. You know,
is it brotherly love or judgment? I don't know.
I don't know. I don't know.
Live in Memphis. What are we supposed to do?
I'll get back to you on that. It's one of those days. What can I say? Oh, by the way, this story out of Memphis, Tennessee, we told you about this a long time ago. You know, our school system here, you just call in. It's like, you tub of lard? I'm going to talk to the makeup artist. She's supposed to give me one chin. I don't think that's working anymore. Anyway, the Memphis Shelby County School Board has, man, those people are terrible. They're all Democrats. And they have destroyed the school district here. So it got so bad. This is one of the largest school systems in America. And it got so bad that the state of Tennessee, which, by the way, the state legislature controlled by Republicans, they actually stepped in and officially yesterday announced they were taking control of the school system. Over 70% of the children cannot read at grade level. Isn't that, that's just insane. Over 70% of the kids can't read at grade level. And if you're a taxpayer, that means you're not getting your money's worth. You're not. So anyway, one of the school board members, her name is Towanna Murphy, as in big toe. Towanna Murphy, she is an aspiring musician. She wrote a very popular song called Who Can't He Be Kissin'? And she's a member of the school board. And so she was debating a Republican over on one of the local TV stations. And I want you to listen to the article. This is why they're upset about the Republicans coming in. Take a listen.
Want to increase the proficiency rates that are far too low right now coming out of MSCS.
Now I'm going to piggyback off of that because we have level five schools. We have a 85% graduation rate. So you can't say that we're not focusing on literacy because we have.
75% are not proficient in reading.
Well, I agree. But that starts in pre-K.
So can you just pre-K, accept the what, help that's coming? Can you
no,
say
no,
this
I'm not going to accept any
Memphis?
Help that's coming over. First of all, we don't even know who these people are. And they all going to be Republicans. You can't come in from another state and tell us how to run our district. 70% black. You cannot do that.
Nearly $2 billion a year to the district. It certainly
But you spent $6 million to audit us.
All right. So how dare he? Who you be thinking you are? That's Towanna Murphy right there. And it's really fascinating. And I get a hoot out of it. It's really a hoot because these people are as racist as the day is long and they can't even see it. The entire school board, except for one person, is black. It's been that way for years. Every single person elected to high office in this city, in this area, is black. There are no whites in charge of anything, and they haven't for a very long time. We're talking like generational stuff now. So all of the problems, and so what this woman is saying, when she's saying Republican, that's code for whitey or honky, if you will. And she's got a big problem with all of you honkies coming in and telling them how to fix what's broken in their school system. Who do you think you are? That's what she's saying. Who do these people think they are? Nobody ever stopped to think about this, that the all-black school board, the all-Democrat school board, is responsible for the ignorance that is spewing out of the school system right now. No one ever really thought to think. Nobody thinks about that. But if you want to take a look at who's to blame for the kids not knowing how to read or do math or any of these other things, you have to look directly at the black Democrats. They're responsible. And quite frankly, the stuff spewing out of this woman's mouth, and she's not the only one, the stuff spewing out of this woman's mouth is racist. It's racist, and it's just unacceptable. But the good news here is that the Republicans have a backbone of steel. There are two of them, a guy by the name of State Senator Brent Taylor and another by the name of Representative Mark White. And they've been called every name in the book. It's so ugly, the attacks on these two men. And all they want to do is make sure that the black children of Memphis, Tennessee can read, can write, can do simple basic mathematics so they can go to college or they can go to a trade school and get a job. And for that, they've been crucified. And I say shame on people like Towanna Murphy. Quite frankly, one of the bigger problems on the school board is half of them can't even read and write themselves. And it's appalling, and I say shame on them. So anyway, all of that is getting fixed, but it's going to be really shocking to watch all of the racists coming out of the woodwork. And by racist, I mean these black radical leftists who hate whitey, they hate honkies, and they are satisfied with the fact that children here in Memphis can't read and write. Well, we're about to do something about that, and I certainly hope that the moms and dads of Memphis, Tennessee, remember who's responsible for fixing a broken, failing school system. Shame on you, you godless heathen racist out there. We'll be right back. All right, welcome back, everybody. Little Rock, Arkansas. An Arkansas cat faced tough contestants in a national contest. Bad Kitty 5000 was facing off against, this is ridiculous, Munchy McPurritos, who faced challenger Orange Julius Caesar Salad and Goofus McDoof Business Horse. This was the Nationwide Pet Insurance annual contest. Wackiest cat names ever. You know what the winner was for Arkansas? This is a very clever. You know, your grandparents used to have really clever names for cats.
Yes, they did. I'm trying to think of them.
Baby Moses. One of my favorites.
Yes.
The winner from Arkansas, though, this is Little Rock. Congratulations. A stray kitten that grew up to be a fairly obese cat. Well, don't tell John from Dawsonville that. The name of the cat, by the way, Cheddar Big Booty Cheeseburger. All right. Cheddar Big Booty. Time for supper. We'll be right back. Hang tight, everybody. Hour three coming up.
From the Liberty University studio in Memphis, Tennessee, it's America's conservative blowtorch.
That's us. That's right. I love this American ride.
Todd starts. Oh,
yeah. All right. It is hour three of the big show. Welcome, everybody. I am Todd Starnes. What an honor to have you with us today. Write down our telephone number. You will need this. 901-260-5926 is our telephone number. That's 901-260-5926. I want to go right away to the Patriot Mobile Newsmaker line and say hello to Mark Lynch back with us. He is running for the U.S. Senate in South Carolina and wants to unseat Lindsey Graham. Is he still at Disney World or is he? No, he's okay, gotcha. He's back now. All right, well, that's good. Who am I to begrudge a man for wanting to have a vacation? I mean, you know, most men in America go to a place like, I don't know, the beach or the golf course. Some go to Disney World. So who am I to judge? Mr. Lynch, good to have you with us today. I hope things are going well in the Palmetto State.
They're growing really great, Todd. Our momentum's growing and Lindsey's going down this year.
Well, I've heard this in the past. So what makes this different? How are you certain that Lindsey Graham is going to lose?
Well, we got our polling a few weeks ago and a Rasmussen poll, and Lindsey has dropped to 41%. I was at 21%. Paul Dans in third place was at 11%. But 10 days ago, Paul Dans dropped out of the race and endorsed me. And that was an awesome thing for him to do. He's joined us. And so his 11% will come our way. And on an informed ballot that was done when Lindsey and Paul was still in the race, Lindsey dropped to 23% and I surged to 34%. So it's doable this year. We're going to give America a great anniversary present by the removal of a traitor in Congress.
You say that he's a traitor in Congress. What do you mean by that?
Well, we had a Breitbart article come out just a couple of weeks ago with his organization, USAID, from 2007 to 2024, $122 million were going to NGOs directly associated with the designated Hamas terrorist organizations and Al-Qaeda. And so I think that's called a traitor. In the last quarter budget of 25 and the first quarter of 26, he again signed to put in $5.7 billion of our taxpayers' money. And we're, you know, we're bankrupt at $39 trillion in debt, but he's still funding illegal aliens so they can get health care and shelter and clothing. And they're not even citizens in this country yet.
You know, I think
we can go on and on.
I think one of the troubling things here about Lindsey Graham is he is certainly a war hawk. He does not hesitate. I mean, if it were up to him, we'd probably be involved in World War IV by now. And he has no problem sending the sons and daughters of South Carolina off to war. How does that mindset play there in your state?
People are tired of it. We're not going to be fooled again. The citizens of South Carolina are done with Lindsey Graham, and we've heard that for the last 14 months. We've been campaigning across the state, and they're loving. They have a viable candidate with me that's a true conservative, a successful businessman, a husband of 38 years, children, grandchildren, a successful debt-free business, somebody that can go to D.C. and represent the people like they need to be, you know. So that's what I'll do when I get into the U.S. Senate.
You know, I don't know what the relationship with Fox News is, but they may as well just make him a co-host over there. Seems like he's spending more time on Fox News than he is back home in his home state.
Oh, yeah. He's campaigning hard because we've got the polling, and he's concerned, and he's doing desperate things, and the lies have started. He's sending out direct mail pieces, and he's on the news talking about how good he is picking all these good judges when he voted for the majority of the judges of Obama and Biden's picks that are stopping everything Trump's trying to do. They're Democrat judges. So how's that good?
I'm just curious about Lindsey Graham and the Save America Act. And what bothers me, I don't hear him out there voicing much support at all for the Save America Act or condemning the majority leader, John Thune, for bottling up the president's agenda.
Exactly. His job as a Republican, when we own the White House with President Trump, we own the House majority and the Senate, he can make a motion to vacate Thune and get four other senators to come along with him and remove him. That's what I'll do. What is he doing? He's posturing when he knows he can finally say, oh, yeah, I'll vote for that when it's gone into another filibuster situation. And when he sees it's safe to say he'll vote for it, he'll say it.
What does it say about Lindsey Graham, though, that he has not done that?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's just horrible because he's not fighting for us.
No, even worse, he's not fighting for the president's agenda. And that to me is just unforgivable. And we need Republicans up on Capitol Hill that are going to push this president's agenda across the finish line. And I don't see Lindsey Graham doing that.
No. And his lifetime record, of course, conservative voting record is 43%, Todd, and his constitutional voting record is 57%. He's failing in every scorecard. He's a liar.
Yeah. All right. Mark, where can people go if they want to get more information about your campaign and getting involved in the fight here?
Yes. And how do we win this? We win it with all of y'all out there helping me. I'm willing to go and represent you like we need with true conservative representation. So go to lynchforsenate.com. What else can you do? People say, well, call me and tell me what we can do. Get your cell phone out and do some phone banking with your family and the friends you know. Send a donation. This takes a lot of money. You know, we're a debt-free business. My wife and I are debt-free since 1999. We put $5 million of our own money into this race to show people we're committed, and I'm doing everything I can do for you, but I need everybody's help out there, and this is the year it can happen. He's down to 41% and falling fast. It's doable.
All right. Well, Mark, we're going to leave it there. We wish you nothing but the very best. And again, Lindsey Graham's got to go. I mean, that's just the reality to it. And folks, got to go check out Mark and his great campaign, great businessman. And lynchforsenate.com is the website address there. That's lynchforsenate.com. Mark, thank you again. We appreciate you coming on the program.
Absolutely. Thank you, Todd.
All right. There you go, folks. So at least you've got a viable choice. And I like that. I think every single Republican running should have some sort of a primary opponent. There's nothing wrong with that. You know, a lot of people say, oh, that's just betrayal. No, it's not. It's making sure that we have the right person for the job. And it's about getting out there and holding literal town hall meetings. It's about agreeing to debate your opponents. Because we've got a lot riding on what's happening in the midterm elections, and we want to make sure that we get the right people out there. All right, 901-260-5926. I want to go to the phone lines. Dee's been holding on for a while, Gainesville, Georgia. Hi, Dee, what's on your mind?
Hi, Todd. I am on my way to work, so I'm going to make my points direct and let you have it. A few years ago, actually about 10 years ago, I worked for a school system in Gwinnett, which, you know, is right outside of Atlanta. The faculty, staff, and students were forced to watch a video about white privilege. And you've probably seen the video where a line of students are lined up, and the white students are asked to step back every time that they mention racial privilege, white privilege. It's a white shaming video. I was appalled. I had come from conservative North Georgia into liberal land, and it was a big culture shock for me. So on the topic of local control, if they do abolish the Federal Department of Education, which I agree with, it'll put our control back to Atlanta, and the folks in Atlanta are as bad or worse as the people in D.C. I don't have the answer, but I don't think that will really help us. Second point is that this school and many of them were obsessed with putting a diploma in the hands of the kids, which sounds great. But the problem is they lost sight of what the diploma represents. The diploma is supposed to certify that this is an adult who's ready to enter the workforce, and these kids were not because of behavior issues and attitudes. These kids would just get up and walk out of the building at will, just leave.
Dee, have you noticed that kids just don't, they're not, I don't think they're scared of anybody.
They're not. None of them. And it's crept northward. I hate that because I love where I live. I actually live in Banks County, Georgia, which borders Hall County, Gainesville. And we've been a traditionally very Christian conservative area, community, and I love that. It fits my beliefs and my lifestyle. But I see it creeping in here. So those are the points I wanted to make. It doesn't help to put a piece of paper in the hands of the child if the personality and beliefs of the child don't represent what that diploma stands for. It's just checking a box, and when they check the box, the liberal administrators get promotions. You know, the old saying, follow the money trail. That was the push to get the diplomas, not to make these kids employable adults. And it goes way back. It goes 20, 30 years back, and I hate that. I do. I love the Lord. I love our kids. I love our country. And I'm deeply concerned about the damage that has been done and what it would take to correct this.
Mm. Dee, it's some great insight you offer, and I'm not sure what the answer is either as far as who makes those decisions on the local level. I just know the federal government needs to get out of the education business, and we'll figure it out on the state and or the local level. Dee, I hope you have a great day at work, and thank you for listening. Thank you for calling in. Folks, our telephone number, 901-260-5926. This is the Todd Stern Show. All right, welcome back. This is the Todd Stern's Radio Show. What an honor to have you with us today. Our telephone number, by the way, 901-260-5926. That's 901-260-5926. And coming up tonight, 5 o'clock Eastern, on the Todd Stern Show. We have Congresswoman Beth Van Dyne joining us. Also, the very latest on what's happening with the election and with the gubernatorial campaign there in California. So last night on Newsmax, had a wonderful conversation with two individuals, Tina Daskovich, who is the one of the founders of Moms for Liberty, and also Philip Geraci, who is an attorney with American Family Association, both of them targeted by the Southern Poverty Law Center. And, of course, the SPLC now under an indictment, 11-count indictment of fraud. Let's take a listen to that conversation. Tina, to you first, your reaction to the indictment.
We have been living under the black cloud of our label that Southern Poverty Law Center placed on us in 2023 as an anti-government extremist group. They placed us on their hate map, and that dark cloud has been following us around. It's put a big old target on the back of our organization. You and I could have a conversation for hours about the damage that that label has done to our moms individually and their personal lives, their professional lives, to our organization's ability to grow and prosper. And so I am thrilled that justice is just starting to look like it may be served.
And also American Family Action. You guys came under the same attack from SPLC.
That's right. They've been doing this for quite a while, and it's pretty revealing, Todd, that now we're seeing, you know, they weren't just sort of trying to investigate it, prevent hate. They were actually stoking it and making money off of it. It's pretty sick what they did, and they've run crosswise with criminal laws, and I'm thankful that we have prosecutors and a justice system that's willing to look into this, because too much in the past, politics have played in the opposite favor. The left got a free pass while people like President Trump, who were not doing anything wrong, were investigated and indicted criminally. So it's nice to see justice served for a change. We'll see how this turns out, but it's good at this point.
Well, yeah, but we've got to, I mean, look, there's a lot of money that's reportedly in offshore accounts. We've got to make sure these people are shut down and shut down for good. Here's one of the jaw-dropping allegations, Tina. The indictment says the SPLC paid organizers of the 2017 Charlottesville riot. Here's Acting Attorney General Todd Blanche.
One troubling example is that the SPLC was paying a member of the leadership group that planned the Unite the Right protest in Charlottesville, Virginia, in 2017, that resulted in the death of one person and injured dozens more. This particular person being paid by the SPLC allegedly received approximately $270,000 over the course of 8 years.
So, again, we're reading into this here, but they actually peeked under the KKK hoods, and there were SPLC people. What the heck here? They blame Donald Trump for this, Tina.
They also doubled their revenue from over the next several months after that happened. After when you look at what they've done, and you know, you can follow the money to see what they've done and bring charges against them and indict them, and you can follow the money and see that it's increased their revenue. But some of the things that maybe aren't as tangible to see is the impact it's had on Americans, the fear that it stoked, the hatred that it stoked, the thoughts that America is racist and that they would carry. It's just the extent that organization has done damage to America, I think we don't even know yet. And I am just so happy that we're starting to take a serious look at this organization.
And Philip, real quick here, the reality is this is just the tip of the iceberg, and it's just appalling, appalling what Christians and conservatives have been forced to deal with over all these years.
Yeah, and it's going to be interesting, too, Todd, to see what happens. As an attorney looking at this indictment, I kept wondering, it's an indictment of the corporation, and yet you have individuals that that haven't been indicted, or at least not yet. So there are two employees with Southern Poverty Law Center that were doing these things that were apparently crimes. I don't want to allege that, but from the statute I've looked at, apparently they were crimes. They haven't been indicted yet. So I don't know if perhaps they're cooperating or what's going on, but we'll see what happens with this. Of course, it's just an indictment. It's not a finding of guilt. You would have a jury trial and everything else, but we'll see how this turns out.
All right, that was a bit of our conversation there on Newsmax last night. And I will just say the Southern Poverty Law Center deserves everything they've got coming to them. But keep in mind, that was the reason why. What happened in Charlottesville, Virginia, is the reason why Joe Biden said he decided to jump back into the presidential race back in the day. And the reason why, ladies and gentlemen, is now we know that Southern Poverty Law Center bankrolled whatever happened in Charlottesville, Virginia. They were literally paying white supremacists and others it's just insane. Just insane what SPLC was doing, ladies and gentlemen. All right, got to take a quick break here. 901-260-5926. That's 901-260-5926. This is the Todd Stern Show. Welcome back to the Todd Stearns Radio Show, everybody. Great to have you with us. Our telephone number, 901-260-5926. Don't forget to check out our great website, toddstearns.com. We have all sorts of great new content there. Also, you'll be able to download a copy of our podcast free of charge and sign up for our daily newsletter. Well, I think we're almost 300,000 subscribers, so thank you for doing that. Well, I want to go right away to the Patriot Mobile Newsmaker line. Very excited to have with us Wendy Patrick, a career trial attorney and a Newsmax columnist. Wendy, good to have you on the show.
Hey, Todd, it's great to join you.
You know, Wendy, we were talking in the first hour about this California gubernatorial debate last night, and it really struck me as I was watching the two Republicans, Steve Hilton and Chad Bianco, and I got to tell you, I was really impressed with what I saw coming out of those guys.
You know, it's true. And, you know, Todd, they really didn't go at each other the way the Democrats sort of engaged in a little infighting on the stage. You know, they're the two front runners, and they had sort of a united front that they presented. You know, and for a fairly low-energy debate compared to some other debates we've covered, it really was a pleasure to see those two gentlemen interact and really sort of point the fire where it belongs at the poor policies they're arguing that they would get if the other side were elected or even were sent to the general election.
I think it was almost laughable that Javier Becerra giving Gavin Newsom the A on how he's handled the homelessness crisis there in California.
Yeah, you know, but you know they had to go there because living in California, I've lived here my whole life, homelessness has exploded over the last decade. Anybody would tell you that. You know, there were a couple of areas of commonality between all the candidates, and homelessness was one of them. But you can't really lose credibility by claiming that, you know, the current administration has made that better. And that's even though you and I probably have both covered that time where you saw Gavin Newsom out clearing the homeless encampments. You remember that?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
We all recognize it's an issue, but you know, Steve Hilton really hit it head on when he talked a little bit about you enforce the law that says where you can and can't stay, but then you have to make sure there's ways in which we can help the people that we seek to move along, help them get the help that they need so they're not homeless and it's not simply an issue of where do you put them. I thought that was nice for him to bring that up because, you know, he's got a lot of guts having spoke his mind as a, you know, on the news so many years, that does, in a sense, qualify him to hit these issues head on. He knows what he's talking about because he's been talking about it for years.
No, it's a very fair point. And again, he just seemed to have all the right answers, and especially on the gas issue. It was sort of laughable watching the Democrats blame Trump for the high gas prices when, in fact, it's the fees and the taxes imposed by the state of California, which is why you guys have to pay, what, $5-6 a gallon for gas.
You know, that's exactly where we are today. You know, I hear often, oh, well, nationwide average. We have never been the nationwide average. We are always paying more. And, you know, I have to say, you know, for Tom Steyer, that he actually hit one of the issues that everybody has in common, and that's the people that live in California can't afford to live here. You know, occasionally you have some candidate say something that everybody agrees with, and that happened to be one of them. But we can't just not talk about it. You know, we have the same problem and complaint among the citizenry when Joe Biden was in office. People said he can't just get out there and say things are good, things are better when we're all looking at our receipts every day. So I thought that's one of the things that's going to continue to characterize this race in California that's different from so many other states where we're not paying the same amount for gas, for groceries, and so many other things as we are here.
Help me understand this, because anybody who watched that debate, I mean, it's pretty clear the two Republicans really hit home, and they answered the questions. I think they delivered the performance they needed to deliver, but I don't get why Californians are, you know, still electing these Democrats who keep passing these insane policies that make their lives more miserable.
And, you know, that question, no doubt, is on the forefront of the minds of Californians, because look who's leading in the polls, the two GOP frontrunners. And that has got to be just devastating for so many Democrats that may have thought this would be a shoo-in. You know, everybody likes to see a lively race. They like to see competition. But if, in fact, we have two Republicans headed to the general, that is going to be unprecedented. I think Swalwell's departure leveled the playing field in ways that were unanticipated, even by the Democratic leadership. And we know that because there's now been this discussion behind the scenes as to which Democrat, not whether, which Democrat should drop out of the race. You know, that two people wouldn't even have been on that stage had Swalwell not exited the race. So I have my eye on next Tuesday night, and I think that is going to be much more in the fireworks department than we saw last night, because supposedly we're going to have a livelier debate. These people have already had a shot at it, and voters are going to be having their say.
May I just say, Katie Porter came off as she's just a very unpleasant, unkind human being.
Yeah, you know, debates really do give voters the opportunity to put a face and a personality with a name. They always draw a colorful cast of candidates, but they're just names on a ballot unless voters actually watch. And I have to say, Todd, you and I both know viewers are voters, and that's why televised debates have made such a big difference in the history of this country, and that even includes last night.
Do you think it sways any minds what happened last night?
There were no breakout moments last night, and breakout moments sway minds. And this is one of the, obviously it's the first debate, but the fact that so much drama has occurred in the California gubernatorial race, I believe it's going to put more eyes on the screen. Probably did last night, definitely will next Tuesday night. And because these are the people that really care, since we're really struggling here in California, I do think that that personal presence and personality is going to make a difference in this race. Perhaps if it wouldn't for some less controversial race that wasn't being so closely watched as apparently it is now.
Wendy, I love your state. It is it's a beautiful place. I love vacationing there, and I tell the same story. But again, it's what happened in Santa Monica. You know, there's a great little place there called Shutters on the Beach, and it's a nice little hotel right there, just beyond the pier, the Santa Monica Pier. And you can't even, the last time I was there, they were warning people, be careful if you're going out on the sand. You know, we've been finding dirty needles at the beach. And you're like, oh, my God, why would Democrats allow this beautiful area just to be turned into some sort of a homeless encampment?
You know, you could say that about so many of our once glorious cities in California. You can just go and look at the beautiful cities up and down the coast. And we have the same issue, you know, and it's not so much that Democratic people that live there, they don't like it either. And even the Democratic politicians don't like it. But to actually get on the same page and admit that, I just don't get it either. And if they can't get on board with these 80-20 issues, that, Todd, I think is 90-10. If you know, that's a huge problem right there, because you know who's picking up those needles? Kids. And that's a big problem. But going into the primary, I just think that that's one of the things that the Republicans really should hit hard on television and in their campaign ads, you know, because this is one of the places that everyone can get behind, and that may push them over the finish line.
Mm. Wendy Patrick joining us. She is a Newsmax columnist. She is a career trial attorney, great American patriot. You know, Wendy, you're in the San Diego area. I love San Diego, Coronado Island, the Hotel Del, again, these are great cities, great history, a lot of great patriots down there, of course, with the naval base. And California, if they would just wake up, I think that a Republican up in the state capital in Sacramento could really start to move the needle a little bit.
And, you know, obviously the fact that the two Republicans have such high ratings really makes you wonder whether this current administration, even though, I mean, today is probably not a good day to talk about it since gas prices have gone up again, but just in general with the very common sense policies that the Republicans are espousing, not afraid to talk about, combined with a unique amount of Democratic infighting. I mean, those two things are forming a perfect storm. That's a play on words because, of course, we live in a temperature-controlled dome here in California. There are no storms. But that provides just this impetus that maybe things will be different for all the reasons you and I have just talked about. I love that you are talking about coming here and pouring into our economy. And that is one of the issues that also unites Californians. I mean, there are so many common sense ways that Republicans can talk about this with constituents. There are pockets of red up and down the state that have been very vocal, that are talking about making life better. And you've got two of those men on the stage coming up here again next week, and two of those men on the ballot that may just defy the odds and be against each other in the general. Boy, will that be something to watch.
It's going to be brilliant, and I can't wait. Is this true, Wendy Patrick, that you play the electric violin? Is this true?
It is true. It is true. And the next time you come out here, I will invite you to come and be in my audience. I would love that.
I love that. I didn't realize you're, in addition to all the other, you have this this resume that's like multiple pages long, so many gifts, a concert violinist, and you're also an electric violinist in a rock band. I love that.
It's true. It's true. You know, my allegiance is to Jesus Christ, my Lord, who empowers me with the energy to do everything else, just like you. I don't know how you have the energy you do, but that's one common denominator.
Dr. Pepper. That's how you do it, Wendy. Dr. Pepper. So, all right. Wendy Patrick, we'd love to get you back on the radio show. Just love all your great analysis.
Thank you, Todd.
All right. Wendy Patrick, everybody. And by the way, Wendy was on the Newsmax show last night. We have a lot of fun, 5 o'clock Eastern. And just till now, I'm self-conscious after the guy from Dawsonville called in.
Don't pay too much mind to it, Todd.
I'm going to go hit the gym between now and the 5 o'clock show.
You don't have time for that.
Maybe that's what I should do. I'll just finish writing the rest of the show on the treadmill. How's that?
There you go.
Holy smokes. All right, we've got to take a quick break here. 901-260-5926. Again, our telephone number, 901-260-5926. This is the Todd Stern Show. Dylan, did you feel that just a few minutes ago? Did you feel a little... A tremble, a shudder?
I can't say I have. What did you feel?
Well, I didn't feel anything. I just, you know, a little roly-poly. The U.S. Geological Survey reported a 3.9 magnitude earthquake.
Wow.
In the Missouri Boot Heel, which is not too far. About an hour or so away? 90 minutes.
I guess, yeah.
I don't drive up in those parts very often. Quake happened just before 1 o'clock. The epicenter, this is terrible. The epicenter, 1.9 miles west of Cooter, Missouri. Cooter, Missouri, that's in the Missouri Boot Heel area. Is that Penobscot County? They say people as far west as Batesville felt the earthquake. Those reporting the quake said they felt light to moderate shaking. So there you go. No words. You know, we live on a lot of people don't realize that Memphis is on one of the most dangerous fault lines in the world.
I choose to forget that because we've never had like a bad earthquake here. So like when it does happen, it sounds like it's going to be the end of the world.
Will be the end of the world because most of the homes here and most of the buildings were not retrofitted. Yeah. So now if you have to go in and you have to renovate a building, you actually have to spend millions of dollars because you've got to bring it up to code so it'll survive an earthquake. But you might not remember this, but the Mississippi River actually flowed backwards during an earthquake, which created Real Foot Lake. So, now they're saying it's a magnitude 4.0 earthquake. in Cooter, Missouri. I love it. What do you call people from Cooter? Cooters?
Cooterins?
Cooterins. Oh, goodness gracious. That's a little silly. No, this was the New Madrid earthquake. When was that? The river flowed backwards. Can you imagine that? So literally the force of the earthquake was so great, the entire Mississippi River flowed backwards.
I'll be completely honest. If it was flowing backwards right now, I would not know.
Mm. Oh, you would know. You would know. So anyway, this happened during the 1811 and 1812 New Madrid earthquakes. And I'm reading here, the massive tremors, this was up to like 8.6 magnitude, created temporary waterfalls, induced landslides, and caused the uplifting that forced the river to flow against its current and created what is now known as Real Foot Lake here in Tennessee. So I don't want to be around. I don't want to be around for another one of those things. My goodness gracious. So there you go. Big 4.0 earthquake there in Missouri. Do the locals call it Missouri or Missouri?
It's got to be Missouri, right?
Is it
Missouri? I've heard several different people say it different ways. I don't know.
Back in the 1960s, and this is an odd way to end the show, but back in the 1960s when they had all the rural shows like the Andy Griffith Show, and you had Petticoat Junction, Beverly Hillbillies, Green Acres, all of those shows. Most of those, I believe, those shows were originally based in either Missouri or Arkansas, and I think on the show they always referred to it as Missouri. Oh, do we have that audio of the guy, the lawmaker from Virginia, talking about he knows country folks? Let's take a listen.
And listen. I almost took issue with the other side saying that we don't understand. But I grew up watching the Waltons. I grew up with Opie. I even watched the Dukes of Hazzard. I think I know a little bit about rural America.
What?
And when I think about why we are here, we're not just here. I'm not just here for Theo. I'm not just here for Arnold or Willis. I'm here for Opie, John Boy, Blotsam, Topanga.
Topanga? Topanga? Oh, is that from Boy Meets World? Is that what he meant?
Oh, yeah, maybe, yeah, yeah.
So that would be like me saying, you know what? I watch Madea movies. I've watched The Fresh Prince from Bel-Air.
Exactly.
I watch Good Times and What's Happening. Oh, my word. These people crack me up. You know, again, why can't politicians just be themselves? Do you really believe that guy watched the Waltons? No child in their right mind ever wanted to watch the Waltons. That was like old people's programming back in the 1970s, for crying out loud. Unbelievable. All right. So anyway, we'll get into more of that tomorrow. That's coming out of Virginia, where they're still trying to defend what they tried to do. God bless the courts, by the way. Circuit court judge stepped in late yesterday and said, yeah, this is unconstitutional what you people just tried to do. And right now the courts have put a stop on the redistricting efforts by the Democrats. All right, we got to get out of here. Good night, Helen. Good night, Ian. Good night, Dylan. Good night, John Boy. This is the Todd Stern Show.